Ready for another day? Another day of what? You all understand what the Buddha Sasana is for, right? Day by day you will understand this better, I promise you. This is like the vast ocean. You can only fathom its depth to the extent to which you have walked into it. How deep is the ocean? They say the Mariana Trench is the deepest part of the ocean, but that's what man has discovered so far. You only know how deep it is until you walk into it. Do you remember as a child, as you stepped into the water? But as you stood on the beach just looking at the horizon, the water seemed flat, didn't it? It seemed like it was at the same level. So you thought it was perfectly fine to just keep walking in, but every step you took, what did you realize? It just gets deeper and deeper. You might have wondered why your guardians, your parents, or your elder siblings might have said, "Careful, now don't go into the water, don't go deep, don't go further in." I remember my mother used to say that, and I wondered why. What was so wrong? You know, it only wets my feet. So what's so wrong with going in? And then you actually start going in, and then you realize how deep it is. So the Buddha Sasana is the same. The further you walk in, the more you realize how profound it is, how deep it is. But I always say, you know, we only need to go in as far as is needed. You have to become a supreme Buddha to understand the full depth of this vast ocean. Not even the great elder Sariputta does. But that's okay, because you don't need to be as wise as the Buddha. You don't need to know all things and everything as much as the Buddha does. All we need to do is understand ourselves. And this is the one time and the one place, the one philosophy that actually teaches you about yourself. Every science, every other religion, every other philosophy teaches us about the world around us. But with this, we learn about ourselves. And in learning about ourselves, we free ourselves from what? From ourselves. That's the irony of it. We free ourselves from ourselves, nobody else. So that is what we've all come here, once again, to understand ourselves, to realize who we really are, to figure out why we suffer, to understand why it hurts when it does, to understand why we are happy when we are happy, why when we are happy others are disappointed, others are sad, and when they're sad or they're happy, we are disappointed. It doesn't seem to make any sense. So really, what we're here for is to try and make sense of what's going on with our lives. We understand what's going on out there. You can explain why the rain rains and why the sun shines. All that man has discovered. Right? Man knows exactly how long it takes for the earth to make one revolution around the sun and one rotation around itself. So man knows all this. They've even calculated how far it is to the furthest planet in the observable space. All this they've discovered. The highest mountain range and the lowest trench. All of this has been discovered. But what people still haven't figured out is why they suffer. Seems a pity, doesn't it? For someone to have lived, 80 years of their life? You know, someone like Einstein, what do you think he should have discovered? Someone so intelligent? Someone like Sir Isaac Newton. See, for all that they gifted man, right, all those inventions and all those discoveries about relativity and whatnot, right? These people had brains the size of houses. Yeah? And they had such intelligence. We consider them to be fathers of modern science. But for all that they possessed, don't you really feel sorry for them? The fact that they invested their whole life, sometimes, you know, they would have sacrificed their family life for that. A lot of them didn't really have a family life. They didn't have a social life. They didn't have many friends. Some of them were married, but you know, their family lives were just complete shambles. So they sacrificed many years of their life, the most of it, to discover something that would be useful to mankind. And yet, they died. They died unhappy, unfulfilled. So if I could preach to Albert Einstein, maybe he's in the audience right now. If I could speak to Sir Isaac Newton, because today we make much use of all those inventions that they have gifted us, don't we? Levers and, you know, all sorts of things. You know, their commitment to science and man's advancement in technology has done tremendous help and good to all of us. So if I could repay that debt, and if I met them today, what would I tell them? I'd ask them to come on Sunday mornings to Rajagiri. If you met them, what would you do? Of course, won't you tag them along? Yes. Because, you know, they deserve the truth, don't they? For all the goodness that they have gifted us, for all the good and great things they have given us. What about our freedom fighters? The people because of whom today we are able to live in peace and harmony? The people because of whom we are able to today live, you know, without fear of bombs going off here, there, everywhere? And people because of whom today we are able to set out, you know, go and do our work, our jobs and go to school and do whatever it is that we want to do? Remember there was a time, I don't know, there are children here, but they probably don't even recall any of this, but the adults in the room will recall. You know, there was a time where you couldn't imagine walking outside your front door. You don't know what's going to happen next. But there were people who sacrificed their lives. That's why at the end of every sermon when we do a merit transfer, right? We transfer merits to those who sacrifice their lives on our behalf. See, the funny thing is, when they sacrificed their lives and they fought for our freedom, they didn't just sacrifice their lives in this birth. Because remember, every life that they had to kill or to take to save another life, in saving lives they earned merits, but in taking lives they earned demerit. It matters not why you kill. If you kill, it is demeritorious. But it is because someone did that, today we are able to live like this in peace and harmony. So therefore, if ever we have a chance to talk to those people, right? We don't know where they might be today, but if ever we do, you know, then this is the philosophy that we need to teach them, so that they can be freed once and for all the sacrifices they have made on our behalf. This is why it's very promising and really very admirable when you bring your parents along to these talks. You know, that shows your gratitude, because you know the sacrifices that they have made on your behalf. If you could bring your teachers along with you, even better. If you could bring your siblings along with you, you know, your elder brother who was always there when you did naughty things and just to, you know, keep you safe. Your brother when, you know, you were in your school age, right, whenever you used to get into trouble, he would come and save you, whatever. Right, the people in our lives who are always there for us. We only know about the people who were there in this life. We don't know about the people in our past lives. But at least if we know the people in this life, whatever you could do for them, this is the one thing that really matters at the end of the day. Because this is the only path to complete freedom from all suffering. The freedom from oneself. All other suffering, all other solutions, all other philosophies can only teach you how to keep the wolf at the door. It doesn't chase the wolf away. That's all it does. They give you a temporary solution, not a permanent fix. That's why I asked you the other day, is eating ice cream the solution to the problem of wanting to eat ice cream? What do you think? Is it? No, it's not. How do you know? Because it never ends, does it? Today you eat ice cream, tomorrow you want to eat it again. And then the day after. So eating ice cream is not the answer. So what is the answer? Buddhism is the answer. And that is what we have come along today, again. We keep on doing this until we have freed ourselves from suffering once and for all. Just keep on doing it. How many things in life do you do repetitively, but to no avail? How many things in life do you do? You just keep on doing it habitually. Sometimes you just keep on doing it. You know there's not much going to come out of this. Like, you know, watching the news. Yes, you've got to keep abreast with what's going on, but only to a certain extent. Why do you need to know what's happening in some other part of the world if it has little or no connection to what you do? But, you know, it becomes a habit. Social media. How much of actually what you binge on social media is actually important for you? When you pick up your phone and go on Facebook or on YouTube, how much of the time you actually spend on those platforms are really investments in your life versus expenditure? But as creatures of habit, you pick up the phone and you start going on it. You just, you know, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And they're designed to be vexatious, so that once you finish reading one, the next one will just show half of it. Right? So it entices you to swipe it up and go on to the next one, and so on. Sometimes you want to get up, but you can't. When you sit down in front of the TV, you know you want to get up, but you can't. It feels like you're glued to the TV set. Have you not experienced this? When you take that box of chocolates, you know you should stop at the third bar. Not the third piece, at the third bar. But you carry on. See, how many things we do in life where it amounts to nothing, meaningless, but we just keep on doing it. So if there are things in life we are prepared to do when we know that it's not going to be productive, then how about this? The one thing that's actually going to be productive. Therefore, you know, hats off to all of you who've been doing this religiously. Pardon the pun, I don't mean in that sense. I mean doing it over and over again until you know that, you know, this is done for you. So you come here because you have purpose. That is what is important. We don't need a room full of people. The Buddha didn't have a room full of people to preach to. When he first started preaching, how many people were there to listen to him? The Buddha? The Buddha I'm talking about. How many people did he have to listen to him? Just 5 people. Just 5. If he'd said, no, I can't preach to 5 people, I'm the Buddha, who do you think I am? You know, bring an audience. Then, even to this day, we would not have the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. It was meant to be only that 5. That's how it was always meant to be. We are not the judge of Vipaka. We are not the judge of the universe. We only understand the universe, that's all. That's what we're trying to do here. So I can't decide, I can't judge your being here or your absence here. I can't judge that. It's not for me to judge anyway. I can only understand why you're here. I can understand why you're not here, but it's not for me to judge. So even if there was just one person in this room, if they're here and I ask them, sir, why are you here? Madam, why are you here? And if the answer is, because I'm here for my freedom. I want my salvation. I'm here for Nibbana. Right? Then let the sermon begin. So let the sermon begin. Let us bring our palms together then, in veneration of the most magnificent one, the undefeated one, the unvanquished one, and the unparalleled one. Unparalleled in virtue, unparalleled in compassion, unparalleled in loving kindness, unparalleled in wisdom, unparalleled in every single way. There's never been one like him, and there never will be one like him again. This is the Supreme Buddha, to whose name we make this veneration. And as we do so, let us also remind ourselves, we have a promise that we have made to ourselves to free ourselves from suffering. This is the pledge of allegiance we take to the Noble Triple Gem.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I'd like to continue a conversation from a couple of weeks ago. We began to talk about the concept of anicca. So we made some headway into asking ourselves the question whether anicca is the same as impermanence. Did you all listen to that talk? Maybe if you weren't here, did you get a chance to listen to it online? Okay. Because this is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. If you were to distill everything that he preached to us in his 45 years of service, if you were to distill all of that into three words, it would be that. Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta. Because this is the truth that no other person, no other soul would ever be able to figure out for themselves. If they did, then we call them a Buddha, a Supreme Buddha. Or at least a Paccheka Buddha. But the issue with the Paccheka Buddha, and because some people believe that they go mute, it's not the case. A Paccheka Buddha is perfectly capable of having a conversation with anyone. It's not that they go mute and they can't speak. What difference there is between a Paccheka Buddha and a Supreme Buddha is the Supreme Buddha, he follows a specific path. And that path leads him to an understanding, full awakening. And he's able to then explain that step by step. It's a bit like this. Let's say, I'll give you an analogy to make sense of the two. Say, have you not seen some people who are muscular? Like they're physically very muscular. Like they're born that way. It's part of their DNA. That's the way they have been formed. So, because it's part of their DNA, sometimes they have to do very little to have a body that is of that shape and of that size and of those proportions. Or another example might be, say, someone who very easily, it matters not how much they eat, just a little bit, and they put on weight. There are some who are like that. There are others, no matter how much they eat, people like that? Aren't we jealous of them? No matter how much they eat, right, they don't put on anything at all. You begin to wonder, where does all that food they eat go? Right? There are some who have that tendency. So imagine there was someone who was, who had to actually really work hard to building their bodies up, or maybe to put on weight or to lose weight. And then there are others who have they're naturally like that. So someone who has to work for it is able to explain to you how to do it when you need it. Right? So if ever you also have that need, then they can explain to you, this is what you have to do. These are the 12 steps to losing weight. These are the 13 steps to putting on weight, for instance. But if someone's naturally like that, and you go and ask them, how have you lost weight? I also want to lose weight. How do you do that? And all they can say is, I don't know much. I'm always like this. I eat. It's not like I control what I eat. In fact, sometimes I wonder, how much more I have to eat to put on some weight. But this is the way I am. Because perhaps they have a high metabolic rate. Right? So they're naturally like that. So if you ask them, how do you lose weight? They're not going to be able to answer that question because they're naturally like that. But if you know someone who's a bit heavy and they're working on losing weight, or someone who's rather thin and they want to put on weight, doctor's advice, right? And they go through that process, they're able to explain to you how they do that. Now a Supreme Buddha and a Paccheka Buddha are similar in that way. So a Supreme Buddha is able to explain to you the path that they have taken. Whereas a Paccheka Buddha, they became Buddhas, but they don't know how it happened. But once they have become a Buddha, they realize that they have no defilements. They have no attachment. In the same way a Supreme Buddha has no attachment, to the same degree, to the same extent, zero, absolutely none. Just like an Arahant. So these three individuals, an Arahant, the Paccheka Buddha, also called a Silent Buddha, and the Supreme Buddha, in terms of their defilements, they're all the same, identical. But they're different to one another because of the various abilities that they possess. Like the Shad Asadharma Jnana. These are knowledges that only a Supreme Buddha has. They are reserved for a Supreme Buddha. No one else possesses them. For instance, if you came across a Supreme Buddha, they'll be able to look at you, not look at you in the way that I'm looking at you, not physically. They'll be able to examine your mind and give you the perfect medicine. They'll be able to say how much defilements are left, what your dormant defilements are. So they'll be able to preach to you like a specialist would be able to diagnose you and give you the best treatment. A Supreme Buddha would be able to do so. But an Arahant, not so. A Pacheka Buddha may not be able to preach to you at all. But they are free of attachment in the same way. So anyway, that's a sidetrack. I don't think we are too bothered about becoming Supreme Buddhas or Pacheka Buddhas, are we? You're in the wrong place then. I'm not going to help you become Supreme Buddhas because I don't know how to. We're all here to try and get this done in this birth if we possibly can. If not, you know, in a very near birth. That's why somehow your paramita has brought you here. You know, think about the lives that you used to lead and the different paths that they took you on. I mean, is it not a surprise sometimes just thinking about where you are today compared to where you were maybe for some of you 6 months ago, for others maybe 6 years ago? You know, not in your faintest imagination, right? Not in your wildest imagination did you think that you would end up here. Just think about where we are today. Not even in your dreams might you have thought or dreamt like you'd be here. But look at where you are, and you've committed one whole morning of a week to be here. And you keep doing it every week. You never thought this would happen. Well, there you go. That's why I say it's not for us to judge. It's just for us to observe and understand how it happens. It's almost like we always understand things after it happens. That's the way it is. So anicca is the essence of Buddhist philosophy. So I want to try and explain to you and go a few steps further in that today, if we possibly can. Now, as we continue talking about this, it is only fair that you will all leave this room today having a different understanding of it, and that's fine. So some of you in the room will have understood everything I've explained to you. The others will have understood half of it. Maybe others would have understood nothing of it. That's okay. So I'm not expecting all of you to understand all of what I'm going to share with you today. That's not my expectation. It's okay for it to be your expectation to try and understand everything I'm going to explain to you. But fear not, because I don't expect you all to understand all of this. Do understand that I have dedicated my entire life to this practice. So I do this 24/7. You may be able to do it one day a week, maybe half a day a week. Right? So what you put in is what you get out. Is that unfair? What do you think? Unreasonable or reasonable? It's reasonable, isn't it? That's the way it's got to be. I mean, I've not put myself into whatever you've put yourselves into. That's why you're getting out what you put yourselves into, and I'm getting out what I've put myself into. But that's okay. We are doing the best we can. But the reason I give this caveat, you know, or this disclaimer right at the beginning, is your understanding. You know, sometimes you come here as a family. Sometimes you come here as, you know, siblings and parents, children, whatever. Right? Maybe on the way back home, you'll be discussing, what did Swami Nase preach? What did he say? You know, what did you understand out of it? Perhaps, you know, you'll have understood two different things. And it might even be that sometimes you feel, a sense of inferiority. It's possible that, you know, you've been coming along to the sermons, but you feel like you're not making a lot of progress. Can you hear me okay at the back? All right. And sometimes you might begin to feel, you know, am I really making progress? I still get angry. I still feel, I still have these desirous thoughts. You know, am I actually making any progress? I still feel jealous about people. I still feel egotistical. Is this normal? This is like an antibiotic course. You have to complete it before you're done for good. So at the beginning, little changes will begin to happen, but you won't notice them. It will, but you won't notice them. Like a little seed that you plant in the ground, you know, if you keep watching it every day, you don't see how much it grows. But you know, leave it for a few months, come back and then see it, and then you will have seen how much it grows, right? Because sometimes, you know, you come up to me and you tell me, like it's as if, you know, you come to the confession box, right? You come and Swami Nasa, I've been listening to these sermons now, but I don't feel like I'm making a lot of progress. I feel like I'm letting you down. You can't let me down. If you're bringing yourself here, you can't let me down. And besides, I'm not asking you to not let me down. Is that what I've been asking you to do? I'm asking you to not let yourselves down. That's what I'm asking you to do. Right? Your presence here is not, does not please me. I want your presence here to please you. So it's okay if the degree to which you have understood this is different for all of you. Swami Nasa here will understand it to a different degree because he practices it every day. Every morning we wake up, and from 4:30 to 5:30 every morning we preach the Dhamma and we listen to the Dhamma. Our morning starts with the Dhamma. The Buddha Puja happens after that because that is our Buddha Puja. I know well and truly, if the Buddha were here, if we went and asked him, Venerable Sir, what is the puja that you want us to do for you? What puja do you want us to do for you? He would have said, practice the Dhamma. Because I strived my entire life, and not just this, my last life, but an entire samsara to discover the truth, the true Dhamma. This was the hardest thing for us to find. Not just myself, but as a man, as a race, as mankind. This was the toughest thing for me to discover, and I did. And now I have given it to you. So practice the Dhamma is what he would have asked us. So therefore, the Buddha Puja, the greatest Buddha Puja we do at the monastery, is practicing the Dhamma. So our mornings start with the Dhamma. Every single day of the week, we do that. And then the Buddha Puja happens. And then the morning meal happens. And then meditation happens. And then sermons happen. You know, a lot of people come to the monastery. We have various programs for the monks, and we have the Anagarikas. You've seen them. But you haven't seen the Anagarikas yet, unless you've come to the monastery. They're just like our young men here, but ladies who have committed themselves to the path. You know, they don't live at the monastery, but they live a short distance from the monastery, but they come to the monastery every day. And, you know, they practice the path just as much as our Anagarika Mahatmyas do. No difference. There's almost 90 of them now. It's a sight to behold. Every morning they walk to the monastery. We call it the white train. They're clad in white. They walk to the monastery, you know, in single file. Keeping in step. It's a sight to behold. You know, young women whose lives were going to be wasted. Wasted doing what? You tell me. Young women whose lives were going to be wasted doing what? Now, don't take wasted in the wrong meaning. You know, what I mean is, what actually adds value to someone's life is the degree to which they have been able to free themselves from suffering. You know, what good is it if you become a doctor but you die unhappy? You know, you've spent your life treating other people but you haven't been able to treat yourself. What good is it if you become a teacher but you die unhappy? If becoming a teacher is something you do to be happy, what good is it to become a wife if you have to die unhappy? If getting married is something you do to be happy. See, it's all counterintuitive, isn't it? Everything we do to be happy, but the one thing that escapes us all the time is that very happiness. So these are young women who've been mothers, some of them, you know, left school, some of them went to university, others, you know, they're doctors, PhD doctors. They've, you know, because a lot of the young people who come to our monastery are very educated people. It's not that they come because they've got nowhere to go. It's not that they're ugly and nobody wants to take their hand in marriage. Not so. Once in a while, come and see them. Right? There's nothing wrong with them. They're not the discarded, you know, people in society. That's why our monastery is not an old people's home. It's not an orphanage. It's not where someone, you know, people go to just, you know, spend the last part of their lives. That's not what it is. We are a factory that attempts to produce arahants. That's who we are. Like the Jetavana from the Buddha's era. You've heard hundreds of thousands of arahants used to roam the land, you know, in the time of the Buddha. Many of them were based in the Jetavana realm. We want to create that at our monastery. And that is what you all contribute towards. That is what you all help towards. You help towards it, not just in giving alms, but becoming one of them. Because our people is our greatest asset. That's why I've been asking, where's my first Anagarika? When is he going to come from the audience? When is my first Anagarika going to come from the audience? We need a few Rajagirians at the monastery. When is it going to happen? I'm not rushing you, because there's no point in doing that. Right? Even, you know, young children, sometimes they come up, you know, I bless them worship, you know, when they worship, and I say, may you be well. May you realize the Dhamma soon enough so that you can enjoy the bliss that I do. Yeah, but you can't rush this, because this is the truth. This is the truth, so you can't rush it. So all that you all need to do is to try and understand the truth. The only reason, if there are no obligations, duties, whatnot, that are keeping you on that side of the fence, it is only because you haven't understood the Dhamma as much as I have. That's the only reason. Let me say that again. If there are no duties or obligations that keep you bound to your lay lives, then the only reason you are still in a lay life and you haven't jumped the fence is because you haven't understood the Dhamma as much as I have. That's the only reason. This is why I am making every effort to try and explain the Dhamma to you so you understand it. Because this is the only path that I can see to salvation. It used to be that those days I used to think, you know, why can't I obtain Nibbana as a lay person? I used to think like that personally. Yes, you can. So I can't say it's entirely impossible. You can. But I think you all understand individually what those challenges are. How difficult it is. Because you don't have the environment at home. That's what it is. And when I say home, I don't just mean home. I mean everywhere outside of this place. Right? At work. Where's the environment for that? When do people come and talk to you about Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta? What are people talking to you about all the time? Right? How beautiful the world is, how wonderful everything is, let's go have a party, let's go for a drink, let's go for a meal, let's go play something, let's go do this, let's go do that. People are constantly trying to encourage you and entice you to do something worldly. Not bad things necessarily, good things, maybe give alms, whatnot, yeah, help someone, that's all good. But it's all good. Good and bad are both part of this world. For this world to survive, you need both good and bad. But to exit, your exit strategy should be something more than that. But while you're here, do as many merits as you possibly can. But every time you do one, have a determination in your mind. One day, let me ask you this question. Knock your hearts and ask this question as I ask you so I can get an answer from you. Don't you someday, don't you all want to attain Nibbana? Yes? Yes. It's just that someday, when is that someday? That's the only thing that separates each and everyone from each of you and from you and I. That is the difference. We all want to attain Nibbana. And sometimes at the end of a meritorious deed, right, you even receive blessings. in the time of the Maitri Buddha, may we all get together again in the same Dhamsabha Mandapa, listen to the Dhamma and attain Nibbana. Right? This is sometimes a blessing that you receive at the end of a meritorious deed. Don't you think one day you might come into robes? Not this birth. Breathe. Yeah? Take a deep breath. Oh, okay. Not this birth. I'm saying, even being a thousand births. You know, when you come and worship Swami Nohanse, when you offer atapirikara, you know, robes, whatever, don't you at least, you know, just a tiny bit of inside you thinking, one day I also want to be in robes. You know, when you hear the words Kisa Gautami and Patachara, and you know, when you hear these names, right, the ladies in the room, and when you hear the names Angulimal and Ananda and Nanda and Rahula, right, don't you feel like one day I also want to become like them? So I think inside each and every one of you, like there's a child in everyone, right? I think there's a little arahant. There is, inside each and every one of you. But it's just the distance between you and that arahant that is different for everyone. For me, it has come very close. But perhaps for you, there's still a little bit of a distance. What I'm trying to do is to get you to hurry along. That's what I'm trying to do. Because it's going to happen for you one day. Let's be honest. Have you not read the stories? Right? People who at least once have brought their hands together, their palms together, and made a veneration to the Buddha. What happens to them? In many million years' time, what happens to them? Huh? Even if all they did was bring their palms together and do a sadhukara, what happens to them? They ultimately attain Nibbana, right? You've heard these stories. Right? Someone offered a stupa, and there was a man who was stood next to that. They brought their hands together and they made a sadhukara. Someone took a flower and offered it to the Buddha, to a shrine, right? Maybe to a statue. You've read the stories, you know this. Or maybe someone just offered a handful of rice to a Rahatan Mahanse. And what happened to them? They went on to become arahants. Now, you don't have an opportunity perhaps to offer a handful of rice or a spoonful of rice to a Rahatan Mahanse, but you do to the Mahasangha every Sunday. Every Sunday. Come on. See, what I'm trying to do is to try to close that distance. I'm trying to bring you closer to that arahant, that little arahant who lives inside each and every one of you. There is one. You're keeping your distance from that arahant, and I'm trying to bring the two of you closer to each other. So one of us will win. I know I'm going to win one day. You can only run, but you can't hide. Because once you've listened to the truth, it will change you someday. That is inevitable. Unfortunately, you have all heard the truth. Sorry to say, you will all exit samsara one day. It'll happen for you. The question is, how long is that going to take? You know, it is said that when our Buddha, the Gautama Buddha, many kalpas ago, in the time of another Buddha, I think the time of the Kakusanda Buddha, if I'm not mistaken, he gave a great almsgiving, a huge almsgiving. And on that occasion, he summoned as many of the people in and around his hometown, in his country, so many scores of people would come to take part in this almsgiving. It was given to the Supreme Buddha and many hundreds of thousands of arahants. This is a story. So it is said that those who got together with him, and those days he was only a bodhisattva, those who got together with him would one day in his sasana attain arahanthood and enter into Nibbana. So if you are one of them, back then, if you were there with him, if you were part of his group, part of his team, then this is the sasana for you. If not, then maybe this is not the sasana for you. But there must be a reason why, when there are so many other things you could be doing on a Sunday morning, and you're all busy people, I understand that, you're all important people, people want you, people want to be with you, people want to associate with you, and yet you are here, you've made time for yourself. There must be a reason why you bring yourselves here. So if Nibbana is something you want someday, then why not today? If it's going to happen to you someday, then why not today? Yeah? So, if that hope in mind, certainly in my mind, I want to try and give you as much of the truth as possible. But you've now heard at least a little bit of it, so there's no turning back now. So let's carry on. Anicca. Let's try and make sure that we have the concept of manifestations in our minds. Because we need this to make progress. We can understand this concept using many examples. That way it's easier to understand what a manifestation is. The reason we need to understand what a manifestation is, ladies and gentlemen, is because when we observe things through our five senses, our natural reaction, our natural response is to not observe things as manifestations, but rather to see them as single units, to see them as entities. Now, when I say this word entity, does that make some sense to all of you? An entity. An entity is a self-sustaining thing. So this is an entity. You are an entity. This is an entity. See, it's self-sustaining. It's there. It can be moved around in, you know, alone, separately. It doesn't have to be tagged along with something else. You know, these are all entities. So let's take this as an example. When you look at this, you see this as a standalone object. Okay, now I'll try and explain each of these words that I use. When I say standalone, you're wondering what does that mean? Perhaps. Maybe you'll get it as the moment I say it. Others might need some help. And that's okay. So what do I mean by standalone? What I mean by this is, when you observe this, you feel that this is all complete. You know, this is complete. This is independent of all other things. You know, it stands on its own. You can move it on its own. Right? This is a single object. It's an entity. This is a unit. So therefore you can count. Right? One fan, two fans, three fans, and so on. You understand what I'm saying? Everyone okay with that? Yeah, this is an entity. The problem is, although you see an entity, this is not really a fixed entity. In other words, this fan that you're seeing here is not really an independent object. It is actually very dependent. It's very dependent. Every aspect of it is dependent. Therefore, this is also a product of dependent origination. Now, here's the thing. You'll all have preconceptions of these concepts. So when I say an object of dependent origination, here's what will immediately come to your mind. Yes, Swami will answer, it is an object of dependent origination because there was a process that brought this together and now it's an object and there were causes that determined its origination. So therefore, it was a dependent origination. But that's not what I'm trying to explain to you. I'll say that again. When I say this is an object, a product of dependent origination, what you might feel is like a mother giving birth to a child. Right? For 9 long months, the child is in the mother's womb, and then when the child is born, you think, so for 9 months the child was in the making, and now the child is born, so dependencies happened in the womb, and the origination happened when the child came out of the womb, and now it's originated. That's the concept that many of you have. It has now been originated. Right? So now it's independent. But previously, while it was in the womb, it was dependent. That's not what I'm trying to explain to you. What the concept that I'm trying to get across to you is, it's always originating, even now, in this moment, and in this moment, and in this moment, in every moment. This is a product of dependent origination. I see mixed reactions. It's okay. I started with the disclaimer, yeah? It's all right, perfectly fine. So let's try and understand what I mean by this then. See, this fan is a fan now because there are various... There's matter here, isn't there? This part of wood, there's the dried leaf, the palmyra, yes? And then there's the thread that is woven around this, yeah? So whatever this is made out of, let's just to keep it simple, let's say it's all made out of carbon, just to keep it simple, all right? So all of this is carbon, okay? Each of these carbon molecules are held together by some force. Yeah, there are forces acting on every single carbon molecule that is keeping it together. If those forces stopped acting on each other for one moment, one split moment, what would happen? What would happen? It would disintegrate, wouldn't it? Yeah? So, right, let's put this on the timeline then. Right now, t equals zero. Okay? At t equals zero, we begin, so we can't really say anything about this at t equals zero. So I'm going to start the clock now. T equals 1. At t equals 1, you see that the fan is still intact. Why is the fan still intact? Because of the forces. The forces are keeping these molecules together. I've paused time now for a second, okay? So at t equals 1, you observe the fan, and you can say that there are forces acting on this molecule, on the molecules, therefore that keeps the fan intact. Right, I'm going to continue time. Press play again. Let's forward one more second and pause it again. Now it's t equals 2. What do you see now? The same. So the fan is still intact. What does that tell you about what happened between t equals 1 and t equals 2? What happened? Why is the fan still intact? Because still there are those forces that keep these molecules together. So then, can you tell me, is it possible to say then that this has already been originated? Or, in reality, is it constantly originating? This product, this effect, this is cause and effect. The causes that keep this object together in this shape are actually in constant action. So really, this is not a static object, it's a dynamic object. The very reason that it takes this shape, this size, this structure, is because there are dynamic forces that are acting on this object every single moment, right from beginning to end. So there is not a single moment in time then, is there, in which you could say it has now been originated, that's it, we don't need to think about it, there are no more forces required to keep it in this shape, right? Job done, stand alone. Can you say that? If you took out the forces, the energy that keeps these molecules together, what would happen? It would disintegrate. When? When? At t equals? Whenever. Isn't it? So throughout time, you cannot talk about an object, a fixed object. That's what I mean by a fixed object. This is not a fixed object, it's in fact a dynamic object. Does that make sense to everyone? Give me a, just show your hand, raise your hand if that didn't make sense to you, and I'll go through it again. Okay, any others? Alright, let's go through that again. I'll use the same example, just to keep it simple. This is an object, and when we look at it, we perceive an entity. What do I mean by an entity? A standalone object. We fail to perceive that really this object is constantly originating. Now, originating is the present continuous, meaning something is going on all the time. Right now, I'm speaking. It's not I have spoken, I'm speaking. Sorry, this is not meant to be a grammar lesson. That sounds very condescending, doesn't it? My apologies. I'm only trying to get a point across to you, okay? So I'm using the present continuous to explain to you that it's going on as we speak about it, as we talk about it, something's going on. See, this object is going on. Like Swaminath, he's going on, right? So this object is going on. It hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped what? Becoming. It's constantly, these molecules are constantly, and the forces that are acting between them are constantly shaping this fan and keeping it in this shape. It's not something that is done. It can never be done. There's no end to it. You know, you can't say at t equals 2, it's done. Because at t equals 2, if the forces working on each of these molecules stopped working, what would happen then? This is disintegrate, wouldn't it? So it's held together. Each of the molecules that make this fan are held together constantly. Think about friendship. You know, you can use any example because all things are like that. All things. Think about friendship. Two people, they call themselves friends. Do you think friendships are made, done, dusted, formed? That's it. You don't need to worry about it. A friend is forever. Is it? No. But haven't there been times where you thought they were friends forever and then you fell apart? What happened? Something didn't work out. The forces that kept you together, right? If you were not able to continue to feed that, if you were not able to continue to sustain that relationship, then that relationship split. But you feel like friends for life. You feel that, don't you? Friends for life. That's why they say when they get on the poruva, till death do us part. Huh? Some people say, what rubbish, Swami Nuansa. I can hear some of you. I can hear some of you thinking. You know what I'm talking about. But when we get into a relationship, we feel like this relationship is going to be there forever. This is what jati does. Now, what do I mean by jati? Jati is a condition of the mind. When the mind takes the form of jati, you know, it's like the mind catching a disease. Okay? So, when the mind is in a sane state, when the mind is in a normal state, the mind doesn't perceive this. That's why when you become an arahant, you see the whole world, everything as a series of causes and effects. Not causes brought about the effect. Causes are bringing the effect. When? All the time. All the time. So the whole universe is in a constant dynamic of cause and effect. Take a moment to allow that to sink into your minds. See whether you understood that part. The whole universe, the entire cosmos, is in a constant dynamic of cause and effect. See, that is why the Buddha's vada is hetu palavada. Everything is contained within that. It enwraps all things. If it's a sankata is a conditioned entity. It's not really a conditioned entity, because conditioned and entity, the two words are, they're mutually exclusive. So you can't say something's conditioned and then call it an entity. Certainly not in the way that I'm trying to explain it to you. Because if I say this is not an entity, what is not is a fixed entity. Lust? Right, let's follow the breadcrumbs and trail our way back. Right, okay. It's not difficult, all right? Only 5 people will come next week. It's not difficult, honestly. If I can understand it, anyone can understand it. I'm not a genius. I'm just a very normal person. If I can understand it, anyone can. I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm just trying to be a good human being. That's all. So anyone in this audience can understand this. You just need a little bit of merit, right, to sharpen your wisdom faculty. And then listen to this attentively. Make every effort while you're here. Make a resolve. May all the merits I've ever done in sansara help me to understand this. Make that resolve in your mind right now. All of the merits, all the almsgivings you've done, all the stupas you've built, all the flowers you've offered, everything you've done, right? All the pirikara you would have come and offered to Swami Nuhansa or the Mahasangha, right? All those merits, may they help me to understand this reality, because once you do, ladies and gentlemen, suffering out the window. That's it. I promise you, suffering gone for good. You can only suffer for as long as you don't understand what I'm explaining to you today. Because you have to create suffering. Suffering is not natural, it's unnatural. Suffering is man-made, it's artificial. Suffering is non-natural. So the Buddha does not suppress suffering. He doesn't. That is why in Vidarshana Bhavana or with insightful meditation, it's not about suppressing your thoughts or anything like that. Suffering is born out of the causes. See, if all entities are conditioned, what about suffering? What about suffering? It's also conditioned. So if this cannot be made, but it's constantly being made, make sense? This is not a made object. It's an object in the process of being made. Even now, and still. Should I have to keep going or you get the picture? At every observable moment, it is being made. See, if all entities are like that, then suffering itself is like that. See, this is why in the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha speaks about suffering and the cause of suffering. So he says, suffering can only be for as long as the causes can exist. Hetum paticca sambhutam hetu bhanga niruccati. So if the hetu or the causes are there now, when does the product come? Tomorrow. Now. So if the causes cease to exist now, when does the product cease to exist? Now. This is what we refer to as pachupanna. The pratya are the hetu, or the causes. They're not the hetu, but they are the causes that bring something together. And upanna, you know what upanna is, right? Born out of causes. So if you want to get an idea of what pachupanna means, for the time being, just understand it as born out of causes. But here's the thing, when I say born out of causes, what I don't want you to understand, and that would be a misconception, is that the causes were there at the beginning and it made the object and now it's there, it's now a standalone object. That is not the case. Now, think about this room for a second. Okay? If I ask you to touch this room, right, what part of the room are you going to touch? I want you to touch the room. Okay, let's bring you something closer to you. The chair that you're sat on. Can you touch the chair for me, please? Yeah, go on. Touch the chair. I meant the chair, the whole chair. The chair. You're not touching the chair right now. You're maybe touching the metal. Right? You're touching the cushion. You're touching the flat part of the chair. Maybe you're touching the back of the chair that you're resting on. Yeah, I asked you to touch which part? I asked you to touch the chair. Go on, touch the chair then. Can you? No. Why is that? Are you going to tell me because there's no chair, Swami Nansa? What are you sitting on then? See, we can't talk about the two extremes. Right? Their being and their not being. This is again going back to Atma. The Buddha's philosophy is not so. The Buddha doesn't teach about things that exist and things that don't exist. In fact, what the Buddha preaches to us is, there is no foundation for existence. All there are hetum paticca sambhutam hetu bhanga niruccati. So then, what is a chair? Start thinking about it. What is a chair? You've seen a chair. This is a chair. You're looking at one. I'm sat on one. You know, there are chairs all around you. But what is a chair? It is the causes coming together in the right order. When? When did this become a chair? When it came out of the factory? Think. I really want you to think about this. When did the thing that you're sitting on become a chair? Was it when it left the factory? So let's think about, you know, what they did at the factory. So they got the cushion, they got the fabric, right? So they wove it all together, put the foam into it, and they made the cushion part. Then they got the iron, right? Then they turned it and they melted it and they twisted it and bent it and then put the screws in and they fitted all it, right? So now let's take this chair, for example. You have the You have the back crest. You have the flat part you sit on. You have the arm rest. Two of them. Right? Then you have the four legs. Okay? Right. Let's take these pieces apart now. Here, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay? Of course, there are many more parts that make the chair, but just to keep it simple. Now it's time to make this chair. We're at the factory, the chair factory. So let's say to make the chair, they're first going to take... You must tell me when it becomes a chair. Okay? Now we are at the factory. I'm going to walk you through the process. You tell me, it's a chair now, Swami Nansa. Okay? Right. So we start with the backrest. So we take the backrest. I'll draw that with another pen. Another color. Can you still see it? Can you see from the back? Yeah, it's the backrest. So, step one. Take the backrest to the seat. That's step one. Is it chair now? No? Okay. Next. Connect the left armrest. Chair now? No? Okay. Connect the right or fix the right armrest. Chair now? Yes? No, not yet. Okay. Fix the first leg. Second leg. It's closer. It's getting close. Hot. Third leg. Very close, huh? Fourth leg. Chair now? Yes? No? So it's a chair now. Now it's a chair, yeah? So if it's a chair now, because now it's a chair, right? You take the chair, keep the pieces. Take the chair and leave the pieces behind, because it's a chair now. I'll say that again. Now that you say this is a chair, because I didn't make a chair. All I did was I put the pieces together. Yeah? So as I start putting the pieces together, you say, chair. I say, oh, okay, all right. Because I never made a chair. All I did was I fit the pieces together. So keep my pieces and you take the chair. Because you're the one who sees the chair. I don't see a chair. I just see the pieces. So where's the chair? Is there no chair? Is there a chair? If there's a chair, take it, but leave the pieces behind. Because I want the pieces. I want the parts that I don't think this is a chair. You tell me this is a chair. I don't think it's a chair. I never want to make a chair. Now, I remember when I was younger, we used to have plastic chairs at home and then they stopped bringing them. Because I loved cars. So as a kid, what I used to do was I used to take chairs, turn them upside down, and then I would push them along, thinking that I was driving. And it had a gear stick and the lot, right? So I'd put my Malli on the back seat and then the back the chair, and I'd drive along. So those, you know, you couldn't get any use out of it by the time I had my way with it. But when I was younger, for me that was not a chair. To me that was a toy car. Yes, of course I understood what a chair was, but I saw a toy car. I saw a car, but my folks didn't see a car in there. They just saw a chair. So they used to tell me, "Brother, stop playing with the chair. Leave it alone. You're destroying the chair. You're breaking the chair. Leave it alone." But to me, that was a car. So I enjoyed driving it around. See, they didn't see the chair, did they? Sorry. They didn't see the car, but I saw the car. Now, in the same manner, I ask you, I don't see a chair here. You're telling me this is a chair. All I did was, I took a few materials, right? I made a backrest, I made a seat, I got some wood that I call an armrest, I got some legs, and I randomly fitted it in this order. It was just random, completely random. And all of a sudden you say, chair. Okay. you're the one who saw the chair. Take your chair and leave the past alone. Can you? So which part is the chair? Where's the chair? Ah, good. There is no fixed chair here. See, if you wanted to take what you think is a chair, you're going to have to take all the causes with you, aren't you? Yeah? All the causes in that order. That's why if this backrest falls, you're going to now take it back to the shop and you say, I want this repaired. Now it's a broken chair. Don't you? So if one of the legs come off, right? Or maybe the armrest comes off, you now don't call it a chair, but you call it a broken chair. So now you take it back to the repair shop and say, please, can you fix it for me? So let's say for instance, this armrest comes off. Right? Your little one's playing with it, and the armrest comes off. Now you bring it back to the factory, to the repair shop. I say, okay, I'll fit it back for you again. Because I never had this intention of creating a chair. All I did was randomly fit parts together. So here's what I'm going to do. Just as I did earlier, randomly, I'm just going to put the parts back together. You're going to take that home? What are you going to say now? Can I please have my chair? I said, I never made a chair. Why are you asking for a chair? I didn't design a chair. All I did was put some parts together in a particular order. It was you who decided to call it a chair. Okay, answer this question for me and it will make more sense to you. Let's take the same example. What's this? A stool. So this is a stool, right? Just a big one. This one? It's just a big stool. Yeah? What is this? A stool. Yeah? This is just a bit of wood. Okay? Just a bit of wood. This is just a bit of wood. That's all. So what is this? A stool. And this is just a bit of wood. Okay. Now what is this? A stool. And this is just a bit of wood. Yeah? What is this? A stool. And this is just a bit of wood. Okay. I'm just randomly moving a bit of wood, that's all. And I'm asking you a question. What is it? What it is? I have no other intention. I have no hidden agendas, I promise you. I'm not trying to make anything. I'm not trying to manufacture anything. I'm just randomly moving a bit of wood. Okay? Right, okay. Now what is it? Now you take the backrest. For what? For a chair. For a stool. But you no longer call it a stool, do you? Now you say this is a chair. So, but I didn't create a chair. I just moved a piece of wood closer to a stool.
The chair is in
the mind. Yes, because you perceive a chair. Now, the point I'm trying to get across is this. Can you separate the chair from the causes? Can you? Can you leave the causes and take the chair out of this? Can you? No. Are you all convinced about that? Yes, everyone? If there's any doubt, put your hand up in the air. Any doubt at all? Excellent. Right? You're all very attentive. Very good. So you can't separate the chair from its causes. Because it is the very causes that manifest a chair. That is what manifestation means. So, there is not a static chair there, is there? It's a dynamic chair. What's a dynamic chair like? This keeps dancing. It's always becoming a chair. Do you see that? The chair is always being born. How is it being born? Because the causes are constantly coming together. See, if at any moment one of these causes, you don't call that a chair now. But because you can refer to a previous situation, a previous configuration, you'll now call it a broken chair. And then you'll say, this is the leg of the chair. But the leg doesn't know this. And the leg doesn't belong to the chair. The very fact that you can do a heart transplant is because the heart doesn't belong to anyone. Don't you agree? Because if the heart belongs to the dead man, how can it now be fixed to a living person and keep them alive? If it actually belonged to someone, if something belongs to something, it can only work in that setup, can't it? Yeah, but you can do a heart transplant, you can do a kidney transplant, because those organs don't belong to anyone. They're just serving a purpose. It's just a configuration of matter. See, so this leg doesn't belong to this chair. But when you perceive this as an object, don't you honestly, hand on heart, feel that this leg belongs to the chair? Isn't that why you say, oh, the chair is broken. Put that leg to a side, we'll take it to the repair shop when we go. Put that chair's leg to a side. Won't you say that? This is the leg of that chair. Not this chair. Please put it to a side. When we go to the repair shop, we'll take it. So when you go to the repair shop, you take this part and you take the part that's come off and you say, right, please can you put these two things together? Because this belongs to this and this is the thing that this belongs to. Why do you feel that way? This is a disease of the mind. I'll briefly try and explain to you before I continue why it is we are talking about this. Because that's the most important part. Because otherwise, you know, this just becomes an academic conversation. It's interesting, yes. So is science. You know, so is the galaxy. It's interesting. Right? But we're not just here to talk about interesting stuff. We might as well start a forum then. We are here to talk about stuff that's really important to us because we are here to fight suffering. So then the question must come to you, how does understanding this help you free yourself from suffering? What's the connection between a chair, a broken leg, and suffering? See, here's the deal. When things happen to you or to the people around you, or to the things around you, don't you feel that they're happening to fix things? Don't you feel like, now if this is a fixed object, if you consider this to be a fixed object, meaning all of this belongs to this object, so this is one unit, and you then fall in love with it, you like this, you want this, you desire this. Now if you lose this cap, what happens? Now you fall into despair, you're disappointed, you feel sad, because this cap belongs to this pen. So because this cap belongs to this pen, then this is my pen, and therefore this cap is now lost from my pen. That's why, you know, when you hear about a death, yeah, and you hear about death, does hearing about death impact you the same way when you hear about someone in your family versus someone in a random family? Does it impact you the same way? No, of course not. Of course not. Because things that are yours hurt you more than things that are not yours. So then what's the connection between these two things? Remember last week I referred to you as panchaskandhas. Do you remember from last week? I said, you were just Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vijnana. It's as if there were five things. When brought together, they manifest you. But in your mind, you perceive these five things as belonging to an object. And who is that object? What is that object? Me. Me. I am the object to whom this Rupa belongs to, is how you feel, don't you? See, say you're walking down the street and you know there's some rowdy teenagers, maybe there's a gang, right? Now you get scared. And they're having a fight with each other, right? You're trying to avoid them, but you know they're coming closer to you for some reason, and then they've got some weapon in their hands, and as they're, you know, they're just having a fight with each other, but as they're moving around, it strikes you and it leaves a cut, maybe on your face. Now it leaves a scar on your face. It's going to be there forever. Previously, you didn't have this. So when you walked in front of the mirror, you looked at yourself in the mirror and you didn't have that scar, but now you do. So you got it treated, but the scar is going to be there for life. Every day you stand in front of the mirror now, you're going to look at that scar. You're going to look at that scar and you're going to compare it to the time when you didn't have it. This scar affects you now because you feel that this is my face that has been cut, that has been scarred. But it's just Rupa. Not Rupa, Rupa. It's just Rupa. But you can't help yourself from feeling that this is my Rupa. Because it's my Rupa, it hurts you. The scar only hurt you when the weapon left the scar on your face. That was maybe 6 years ago. But it still hurts you today, doesn't it? Maybe there are marks on your body. Perhaps, you know, if you were subject to violence as a kid. Or maybe if you were subject to domestic violence. Maybe if you got into a fight with someone. Right? And it left a scar on your body, you got into a fight, right? And there was a weapon involved. You know, people go through these things from time to time. Right? And if that scar is on your body, you can put on your makeup and try and cover it, but you can cover it from the whole world, but you know it's there. So maybe say there's a scar on your shoulder somewhere, nobody knows this, nobody sees it, but every day you take off your top, you see that scar. It was left there, on there, by your ex-husband. Right? You had an altercation at home, it got into a fight, and then he whacked you with something and it left a scar. That was what led you to a divorce, but to this day, you look at it, it doesn't hurt you anymore, physically. Physically, it doesn't hurt. But mentally, every time you see that, how does that make you feel? It hurts you, doesn't it? Because whose shoulder's been scarred? Mine. What if the scar was on another lady's shoulder? Another person's shoulder? Yes, you'd still feel, you know, sympathy towards them. But it's not the same. You personalize this. It becomes yours. When something becomes yours, it hurts you more. See, now don't you think, if you ask me to speak to a group of people who are subject to domestic violence, what would I talk to them about? Do you think my effort would be to try and stop domestic violence or to try and teach them that Rupa is just Rupa? As I said, you're never going to see me walking around as an activist holding up placards saying stop domestic violence, stop this and that. I'm not going to do that. You're not going to see me in town halls. But here's what I will be doing. For as long as my heart beats and I can breathe the air that God has given us, I will always be trying to help people to realize that Rupa is just Rupa. It's not yours. Vedana is just Vedana. I'm glad that we have some members of the elderly members in the audience, because I know soon enough your bodies are going to start giving you problems. Your backs are going to start hurting, your knees are going to start aching, your hips are going to start creaking, whatnot. And when this happens, you're going to start to feel the Vedana. It's going to hurt. Then you'll take yourself to the doctor. You'll take yourself to the chiropractor. Yes? Got it right? Chiropractor. Thank you. You're going to take yourself there. You're going to take yourself to the... you're going to take yourself everywhere. I'm yet to discover these names. You know, it'll happen. Soon enough, I'll know all those names like the back of my palm. But I know a few of them. Right? You're going to take yourself here, there and everywhere. Get yourself some treatment because the pain's going to be painful. What else? I can't stop that from happening. I don't have physical painkillers, but what I do have are mental painkillers. I can promise you this, ladies and gentlemen, 90% of whatever you experience as physical pain is not really physical pain. It's only 10% of it that is physical pain. The rest is all magnified and amplified. Because when it hurts, you can't help yourself from feeling that it is I who's hurting. That pain becomes part of your identity. So then you can think of nothing else than the pain. Because who do you like to think most about? Yourself, right? So when the pain becomes you, so there's nothing more you want to think about than yourself. So when you think about you, you think about the pain. So I'm not trying to give you a philosophy that teaches you to suppress pain. No. I'm trying to give you a philosophy whereby you are able to simply observe pain as pain and not internalize it. Not make it part of your identity. That we can do. I've experienced this. So therefore I speak firsthand. I've been there. Yeah, things happen. Accidents happen. I know that today I respond to pain in a very different way to the way I used to respond to pain. Very different way. Pain doesn't hurt as much. It's still pain, but it doesn't hurt as much. So I'm glad that there are elderly members in the audience, and as well as young people. You know, who knows when the next accident is going to happen? Who's going to die first? Put your hand up. Okay, who's going to die last? Put your hand up. Can we say that is the youngest person in the audience? Can we? Who's going to die first then? Can we say it's the eldest member of the audience? Certainly not. So who's going to get into the next accident? The next car accident? Who's our victim? How can you say? Who's going to have the next slip, fall and crack their skull? Who's going to break their neck? Who knows? Who knows? But when that pain comes to you, if you are armed with the Dhamma, Dhammo have rakkati dhammachari, the Dhamma will come to your rescue. It will, it always will. Because what you will understand is, Vedana is just Vedana. It's not my Vedana. And I'm trying to get you there by explaining to you the concept of Anicca. Because it is your understanding of Anicca that's going to help you recognize that Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vijnana are all manifestations of the principle of Anicca. Katama Chananda Anicca Sanya, the Buddha asks. The Venerable Ananda, because he's now about to go and give this discourse to a monk called Girimananda, who was very unwell back in the Buddha's time. So as he was preparing himself to go and meet this monk, Girimananda, the Buddha says, Ananda, when you go speak to him, give him this discourse and it will help him to free himself, to come out of the pain. It will help alleviate the pain. This is Idananda Bhikkhu. Rupang Anicca, Vedana Anicca, Sanya Anicca, Sankara Anicca, Vijnana Anicchanti. This is the Anicca Sanya of the Panchaskanda. This is how you reflect on. I haven't fully explained it to you yet. We've only just made some baby steps yet. So I'm not expecting you to now completely grasp the whole concept because I've only just begun to explain it, okay? So it's fine. Because you might wonder, okay, nothing's changed. It's fine. This is a cake that you have to bake in the oven for a while. There's no magic wand. If there was, I would only have this on one Sunday, and that's it. Don't come back here again. You've got to bake this cake, and it's going to take a while. You've got to leave it in the oven for a while. Right, come back to this. Where are we with time? Still got time. So, the causes manifest the result. If, at the very least, when you leave this room today, you take away this understanding of cause and effect and manifestations, I'm happy. If nothing more than that. Because what I want you to do, folks, when you leave this room from today, until next week, as you walk out there and observe things, now, can you see from wherever you sat, can you look out the window, see some object, something, an object, whatever it might be. If you can't see out the window, look at me. I'm sorry. You're going to have to settle for that. If you can see maybe a roof of a building, or maybe a high-rise building, or maybe a tree, right? Whatever you can see from the window, through the window, try and do what you just did with the chair with that object. Instead of seeing it as a fixed entity, do try to see it as a manifestation of the causes that keep it together. See if you can, as I'm speaking, do the practical. You're doing a practical and I'm giving the theory. Okay? So as I speak, see if you can try and understand, perceive that these objects are constantly being manifested. So if you're looking at a building right now, it's not a made building, is it? When did they finish making the building? You can say the workers finished making the building, yes, fair enough. But actually what the workers did was, they provided the causes that would be there for many years, maybe 60 years, 100 years, whatever. Those causes will continue to provide causes to keep that building up. That is what you see out there. That's why one day that building is going to collapse. Because it's not a made building. Otherwise, how could anything collapse? A building can only collapse when at some point the forces that keep that building together, the forces that keep those molecules, those atoms, that material together, the moment it ceases, now you can't keep it upright, you can't hold it upright, the whole thing collapses. Madam? Someone say something? So that is what a manifestation is. Now look at Swami Nahase for a second. You see a body. There's a head up here, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, right? Arms. Whatever of me you see right now, instead of seeing Swami Nahase, a person, see if you can try and look at me in the same way that you looked at the chair. At least if you can think of it as arms, you know, the head, eyes, the ears, right, the neck, the top part of the body. Can you see how these things are constantly kept together to give this form? See if at any point the tendons that keep these two bones together were to let go, now this arm would not be any longer connected to me. If the skin were to be severed, right, this arm would not be connected to me. So have I been made, or am I in the process of being made? I'm in the process. I'm constantly in a process, aren't I? When you think of rain, what is rain? It's a process, isn't it? Because when you look outside and say it's raining, see, that's why you don't say it's rain. What do you say? It's raining. Why? Because it's continuous. What about the chair then? It's chairing, isn't it? Maybe that's why they call them buildings. So what about me then? I'm being. That's why they call it being. Being. It's continuous. Now when you think about rotating, you understand this. Because it's a process. Flowing, you understand this. Heating, you understand this. So instead of thinking about nouns, try and put all things into a process and then you'll see verbs. Can you? Now look at this. Instead of looking at this as a vatartha, which is a noun, think of this as a verb. Do you understand what I'm saying? Just put give me a show of hands, it doesn't make sense to you? Wonderful. What a brilliant audience you are. What did you eat this morning? Think of this as a verb, not a noun. Because if you only think about a noun, you think about an object. A made object, a done object, a fixed object, an entity, right? I want you to look at this and think about not a noun, but a verb. Meaning, this is going on right now. What is going on right now? There are forces, there's matter and energy that is constantly keeping this in this shape right now. When you say right now, is it every second? So it happens at 1 second and then it freezes and then the next second it changes again and then the next second it changes again. So what happens between seconds? Is it every second? It's not, is it? It's every millisecond. Millisecond? What about the attoseconds then? And the femtoseconds and the picoseconds? What about them? So, in which second or in which time interval is this made? Can you put a time scale on this then? No, that's why the Dhamma is timeless. None of these objects are bound to time. Akaliko is a feature of the Dhamma, is a characteristic of the Dhamma. There is nothing in this world, is there, that you can say is done in relation to time? Are you done? Are you done? Or are you there? You are being, aren't you? You are being right now, you are being. That's why you are living beings. You are living beings. See, you are not live be. You're not live bees, are you? What are you? Living beings means it's a continuous process. Like the rain, it's a continuous process. Like blowing, the wind is blowing. It's a continuous process. If the blowing stops, is it any longer wind? There's a bit of wind that doesn't blow. Do you call that wind? No, because it's the movement of air that you call wind. Now, can you look at and perceive all entities in that manner? Is what I'm asking you to do now. My invitation to you over the course of next week. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you understood just that bit and walk away with that today, that's a great achievement. Put everything else to aside. If you can just walk away with that understanding so that as you leave this room, you can contemplate on things. Right? So you walk up to your car. Right? That's what you're going to do immediately after you leave this room. You're going to walk up to your car. When you look at your car, a car is a noun. Put the noun to a side and start looking at a verb. Can you see carring? Not caring. Carring. What do I mean by carring? The cause is constantly keeping it together. Constantly. So now if you have a Merc, right? They didn't make it at the Mercedes-Benz factory. It wasn't done. They brought causes together and they arranged those causes and those causes are constantly going to be together. But it was not done. It wasn't done, fixed. No. It's still carring. Those causes are still coming together, manifesting a car. It's a continuous tense. That's why if any of the parts of the car stops doing what it has to do, now you say it's a broken car. See, let's say you get a flat tire. Okay? But when you think of a car, the tire has to not be flat, it has to be good, right? But if you get a flat tire, now it stops carring. It's a car, yes, but you can't drive it now. So now you have a broken car. So then you take the car to the garage and you get it fixed. Right? Or maybe if the engine, if it develops a fault with the engine or whatever, right? You have to take it to the garage and get it fixed. Because something about the causes are no longer carring. Because what should a car be able to do? Drive. So if you can't drive it, you no longer consider it a car. You say it's a broken car. Only a car that can be driven do you call a car? See, now therefore, start looking at all things around you. This is what I want you to do for the course of next week. Practice this. Do this with a few examples. When you get home, you'll see maybe someone will have cooked for you. As if Swami Mahansa, I have to go home and do the cooking as well. I can hear some of you say. But maybe there are some of you who are fortunate enough to have food cooked for you. Like me. Come to this asana. What are you waiting for? So when you get home, right, and you have your, I don't know, say some dish cooked for you. Maybe say you have a brinjal curry. Right? Is it made? No, it's brinjaling. What do I mean by this? Whatever the causes are, it's manifesting a brinjal curry. It's manifesting an okra, lady's fingers, whatever. It's manifesting a dal curry. It's manifesting rice. Rice is manifesting. Because there are the causes that are constantly kept together by the energy, that keeps those causes together, that manifests in that manner. Now, isn't this the very reason you can eat it? And then this system that we call the digestive system starts to work on it, and then chemical energy, mechanical energy, these energies start to work on it, and then does what to those molecules? It pulls it all apart, disintegrates it, and then recombines it in a different structure, creating what? Me! Really? Creating you? This is just rice reconfigured. So you have fried rice. What other rice do you have? You have cooked rice. You have parboiled rice. And then you have Veerasekara rice. Samarvikrama rice. Whatever rice. Aren't you rice? What, Condoleezza? You're just rice reconfigured. Don't you accept what I have to say? You're just rice reconfigured. So are you not just manifestations then? It's just matter rearranged, and there's energy that's keeping it together. You're not made. You're not done. Right now, whatever shape you're taking is a manifestation. You're being. What else can I say? You're being. This physical form is being. Your hair is being. So if your hair is still, it hasn't turned grey yet. Right? You still got a nice dark jet black hair on your heads. Why is that? Because the black is being. The moment the black stops being, then grey. Then you have grey hair. Again, causes and effects. Most people understand cause and effect to some extent, but what they don't get is, in fact, what people think cause and effect explains is how an object was made from the causes. That is what most people think when they think about cause and effect, because science helps us understand that. Right? So if you ask how was this made, they'll say there was the barrel, there was the cap, there was the bit inside, and then there's the nib, there's the ink. Right, these causes were brought together to make this. And then they'll say this is a made pen, a done pen, a finished pen. It's not a finished pen. When is a finish? When does a pen finish? Never does. Because this is not a static pen, it's a dynamic pen. But we call it a pen. There's nothing wrong with that. Because we have to have a name for conventional use. You need to be able to refer to this as a black pen and this as a blue pen. You need to be able to refer to this as a pen and this as a fan. Because we need that for our survival. Right? The world couldn't exist. We couldn't exist if we didn't have conventions to refer to. Otherwise it'll all be just Rupa, wouldn't it? So you can't call your daughter. You'll just say, Rupa. And then everyone at home comes running, even the dog. But you don't do that. So you've given a conventional name to Rupa. It's just a conventional name. That's why we call this a school. That's a conventional name. Do you think any of these buildings know that it's part of a school? Do you? None of the causes know. So the causes don't need to know. So that's a significant point actually. The causes don't need to know what they're getting involved in. They don't need to know. Which is proof that there is not really anything they're getting involved in. There doesn't have to be a set agenda. When birds fly in formation, have you seen birds flying in formation? I'll try and bring a video clip in the next slide. There's a phenomenon called a murmuration. A long time ago in the monastery, I showed it in a sermon, but I'll bring it to you for next week. There's a phenomenon called a murmuration. It's called a murmuration because birds fly in formation. Excuse me. And when they fly as a flock, there are large flocks, you know, maybe thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of birds, tens of thousands of birds at the very least. They all flap their wings in harmony. So there's a sound that comes, and it's called a murmuration. So when this phenomenon takes place, right, each bird is an individual animal there. Each bird. The shapes that they make, it's best if I show this to you and explain to you. I'll do it for next week. But very briefly, as I brought the example up now, the shapes that they make, see, they don't know that they're taking part in that shape. Have you seen this phenomenon of birds flying, formation flying? Yeah? Yes? No? Yes? Okay. Anyone who hasn't? You all have. Okay, but we'll see you on next week anyway, so I'll explain the concept to you. What I'll be doing is I'll show you the video clip and I'll ask you, what do you see on screen? So you'll say, Swaminas, I see a penguin. Swaminas, I see a Godzilla. Swaminas, I see a shoe. I see a dragon. You'll start calling these things out. You see patterns that the birds don't know that they're involved in. In the same manner, these causes, they have no agenda. That's why I say, I am not making a chair here. I am not making the chair. I am just bringing causes together. For what? You decide. I am just bringing causes together. Therefore, when the causes come together, at some point you say, stop, that's a chair. See, let me prove it to you. See, at this point you said this was a stool and a piece of wood. At this point you said the same thing. At this point you said it was a chair. I had no intention. Just imagine I didn't ask you, I didn't check with you as I was doing this. I'm just going to keep continuing this. I'm just going to keep continuing to move this. Right? And unbeknown to me, you have already formulated a chair here. At one point. At this point you said it's a chair. There's another point you will be saying that. Where's that? At this point you say, it's a chair again. But I had no intention of this. In fact, maybe I didn't even know there was a stool here. I'm just moving a plank of wood. And then I carry on moving. And you say, you make the chair, make the chair, you made the chair. No, don't do that, don't do that. You've broken the chair. Oh, you made the chair again. Oh, no, you've broken the chair again. What? Just imagine if I did that. Are you with me? I don't know if what I'm saying actually makes sense. It makes sense to me. Right? This is the rest. This is the block of wood. I can't even see the back. I can't even see the stool now, can I? But I can move this, can't I? So I, as the owner of this cause, do I need to know what's being made right now? Do I need to have an agenda for chair? No. But you observe it and you have a certain configuration to which you have given a conventional name, a chair. Anything wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is if you perceive a fixed chair. That's what's wrong. If you think a chair is a static chair, it's a chair, it's nothing but a chair, and it cannot be anything else than a chair, then you have a broken chair. See? That's the penny drop then. Then you have a broken chair. That's when you start to weep. That's where grief comes in. And then you have the threat of me breaking your chair. Then you have fear. See how fear and grief enter the picture? When you're thinking about a fixed chair, now you have a broken chair and the threat of the chair being broken. So there's both fear and grief. But, you know, now it's just what manifests is a stool, and here is a block of wood. Stool, block of wood, stool, block of wood, or plank of wood, stool, plank of wood, still, but you can say it manifests chair. Manifest is okay. Manifest is okay. Because if manifesting is all that's happening, then at this moment it's manifesting as a chair. Maybe this moment it's manifesting as something else. It's just a manifestation. But you see, if this becomes a chair for you, now you have something to compare it with when I move it here, don't you? I'll try that again. If this becomes a chair for you, a fixed chair for you, when I move this here, now you have something to compare this state with, don't you? That is what upadana is. See, you're clinging on to a chair. You've heard upadana before. Avidya paccaya sankhara, vijnana, nama rupa, salayatana, passa, vedana, tanha, upadana. No, sorry. Salayatana. Let's start again. Avidya paccaya sankhara, vijnana, nama rupa, salayatana. What's the next one? Passa, thank you. Passa, vedana, tanha, and upadana. So now you cling on to that. So this is the clinging that happens in the mind. So because the mind clings on to a fixed chair, an entity, now when I do things to that manifestation, you're not now working with manifestations, you are working with fixed things. So therefore you say, upadana paccaya, then bhava bhava paccaya jati, and then you go, jala marana, death, decay, and all the 11 great fires that come along with that. Shoka parideva dukkha domanas, all these things, lamentation and despair and disappointment and frustration. See, all that come as part of the package. All because of one reason. You saw this as a fixed chair. But if you only see this as a manifestation, this is one manifestation, this is another manifestation, this is yet another manifestation, this is yet another manifestation. There's nothing wrong with manifestations. Now, but when you want a chair, when you want to sit down, do we have the time for this? Like I said, there's so much I want to get through to you, but very little time to do it all. I'll give you this, because I think it's only fair. Because, of course, if you're going to be doing your homework, you'll need this part. What's your homework? Observe, right? Observe the world around you. And instead of seeing fixed entities, do try and see manifestations. Your mind, in fact, your existence doesn't really need chairs. You don't need a chair. What you need is something to sit on. In fact, what you're looking for is the ability to sit on. That is what you need. You don't need a chair. Do you need a chair? When you want to sit, you just want something to sit on, don't you? Whether it's a chair or someone's lap, who cares? Remember at school, right? When you're on a school trip, right, they hired a bus for 60 people and there were 100 people going on the trip. So what did the remaining 40 do? Exactly, that's what we all did. So everyone took turns. So you just need something to sit on. It doesn't have to be a chair. When you need, do you need a pen or do you need something to be able to write with? What do you need? Something to be able to write with. That ability we refer to as a pen. See, there are two ways in which you can define things in this world. One is in the way that it's constructed. Okay, so if you have the barrel, let's take just a standard pencil. Like if you have the lead on one part and the wood on the other part, the two of those things together, so by form, by the way it's constructed, you can refer to it as a pencil. But you can also refer to something as a pencil if it can be used to write. Then also it's a pencil. Think about a bottle. A bottle. There's a certain shape that we refer to as a bottle. Then there's also the ability to hold water. We can refer to a bottle in that way as well. For as long as it just serves that purpose, being able to retain water, we can call it a bottle or a vessel of some sort. So really, as human beings, for our survival, what we really need are not the objects that we have given names to. What we really need are the characteristics that they possess. Are you all with me here? What we are really looking for are the characteristics that they possess. I don't need a mic. I don't need a microphone. I just want you to be able to hear what I'm saying. Give me a microphone, give me an elephant, who cares? As long as you hear what I've got to say, that's all I care about. We need something to give us shelter. It doesn't have to be a concrete roof. It doesn't have to be. So in the same manner, the mind is always looking for these characteristics. Because it is the characteristics that bring convenience. So therefore, when you are tired, you just want something that carries your weight. It'll hold your weight when you put yourself down on it. You can call it a chair, call it a stool, call it a table, whatever. It doesn't matter. So, that you can achieve from specific manifestations. As I say, if you turn this manifestation on its head, in other words, if you had that, it has different characteristics to this. This you can sit on, this you cannot. Agreed? You'd say, but you can turn it around and you can sit on. Yes, but then that's a different manifestation. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a different manifestation. So manifestations have characteristics, like water and ice. See, it's the same matter, different quantities of energy, but different manifestations and therefore different characteristics. When you want to make a cup of tea, you don't take ice. You take ice in a different form. That form we call water. Yeah? Because in the form of ice, it's not usable to you. The characteristic that you seek is not in it. It doesn't manifest in that way. So therefore you take water. When you want to take a shower, there's no point ice coming through this because ice doesn't flow. So you need water. You need water. You need that matter in that manifestation. So now do you see, so really the point I want to get across to you, ladies and gentlemen, is as human beings, we are interested in various manifestations because they allow us, they help us to achieve the characteristics that give us convenience in life. That is why we are interested in the manifestations. So if you need a car, you've got to get a car. There's no point getting yourself a bike. Because it still matter. You know, the car and the bike, they've both been made out of matter. Maybe iron, rubber, whatever. It goes into making it. It's the same matter. But one manifestation helps you to drive around safely. The other manifestation, maybe not so safely. Because now you're exposed. You're on two wheels. With a motor car, you're on four wheels. Safer. Different manifestations. So the same objects, when you arrange them in a different configuration, you get a different manifestation. And why are we interested in different manifestations? Because they have different characteristics. Are those characteristics not important to us? Of course they are. Because those characteristics bring convenience to our lives. When you want water, you need water. When you need ice, you need ice. What do you use ice for? Ice skating. Take an example, ice skating. Is it any good to have water where you need to go ice skating? No. But when you want to take a drink, there's no point having ice. See, different manifestations. So in the same manner that a chair manifested, water manifests, ice manifests, steam manifests, all you got to do is keep adding energy or taking energy out. See, a flux of energy in a system can change the configuration of matter. Now, this is not a physics lesson, by the way, although it's sounding like one. It's not intended to be. But physics is the study of matter and energy, isn't it? It is a good field to use to understand the phenomenon of anicca. In other words, how it is the causes that manifest the effects. Yeah? So, lastly, as I was saying, when we have this plank of wood, I just keep moving this. I just used the pen, right, didn't I? I was using the pen. Right? I just keep moving this. This is the block of wood. This is the plank of wood. I just keep moving this. And at one point you say, that manifestation suits us, Swaminathan. So leave it alone. I keep changing the manifestation. Because I'm not working to your agenda. I'm not working to the chair's agenda either. I'm just energy. I just keep moving things. That's it. So imagine I was a pendulum. I'm moving this back and forth. If you see a fixed chair now, at some point, you're going to say the chair is made and the chair is broken. See? Made and broken. Made and broken. About to be made, made, broken, broken, broken. About to be made, broken. See? And therefore you weep. Now you're talking about death. You're talking about decay. See? Because you're talking about a fixed chair. Therefore, decay and death are also creations of the mind. Once you understand that, you will not cry at the next funeral. Are you ready for the next funeral? Are you? Are you sure you're not going to cry? See, that is where I want you to be. That is where I want to get you. When your relations are there, cry. Please. Do them a favor and cry. Right? Otherwise they'll think that something's wrong with you. But once they've left, you know, you don't need to suffer internally. See, where's the broken chair? For there to be a broken chair, there has to be a chair. Mustn't there? For there to be a broken chair, there has to be a chair. A fixed chair. An entity called a chair. If all there are manifestations, then what is broken? What's broken? What's made? What's decaying? Nothing. It's just a manifestation. So there's a good apple and a rotting apple. Which one's the manifestation? They're both manifestations. Just a different quantity of matter and a quantity of energy. That's it. But if you see a fixed apple, now you say, this apple is decaying. Look at the apple decaying. The apple was good initially, but now it's decaying. Now it's rotten. Now it's dirty. Oh, it was a good apple. Now it's rotten. See? Now you're in despair. This is why the Buddha gives us the medicine that heals the mind. All you got to do is to understand this philosophy, ladies and gentlemen, and then you'll be freed from this concept of jati. Jati is the concept of separation. This is what I mean by separation. You have separated a chair that is separate from its causes. That is what I mean by that. Once again, you have separated a chair. A chair that is separate from its causes. Do you get that? You are now seeing a chair that is separate from its causes. But if all you saw was a manifestation, you can't talk about manifestations without causes. Because the causes are the manifestations themselves. But when you think about a fixed product, now you put the causes to a side and you see, you perceive an actual entity. And then when the causes change, because that's what really happens, the causes have no idea what you're thinking about them. It doesn't care what you're thinking about them. You've created this imaginary world for yourself and you want to live in it, but the causes have no concern or consideration about that. The causes will change as they are meant to change, and then you fall into despair. Because, alas, my chair is broken. It is you who created that chair. So vipaka does not bring suffering. And that's the long and the short of all this. Suffering does not come to you from the outside. Does not. Absolutely not. Physical discomfort, yes. Okay, this hurts both of us the same. That hurts both of us the same. Physical discomfort, yes. But mentally, there is no way the person sat next to you is the cause of your suffering. There's no way your ex-husband is the cause of your suffering. There's no way your friend is the cause of your suffering. There's no way your mother, your father, your children cause you suffering. No way at all. In your mind, you create fixed entities. How come they are responsible for that? If you create your own suffering, why? How come your neighbor is responsible for that? In which case, you have to give them credit for your happiness as well then. So every time you earn something, you know, give them a cut. That's unreasonable. That's unfair. If you go and, you know, keep hanging your hat on somebody else's hook, when the hook moves, the hat moves. That's your problem. So this is the principle, the philosophy that helps you to become independent. Your happiness becomes completely your own affair. I want to bring you to a state where even I can't make you unhappy. How's that for a deal? Huh? That's what I want for you. One of these days I should be able to bring you up in front of the stage and mock you in front of everyone. You bald-headed guy. You old man. You fat guy. You thin guy, you short guy, you blind guy, you black guy, you white guy, whatever. If it offends you, that's because this rupa has become yours. See, how does bullying happen? Tell me, shouldn't every school child listen to this? Truth. Huh? Shouldn't every school-going child listen to and hear this truth? Because we are not about changing the outside world, we are about healing hearts and mending minds. If the problem is in your own mind, then that is where we have to find treatment. Not go changing the world. Well, where do we finish? When do we finish? Where do we end? How many children are we going to put right? How many unfair worlds are we going to put fair? When is it going to ever happen? How can we go stop all domestic violence? How can we go stop all abuse? How do we do that? It's unsurmountable. But this, if you get it done right, done once and for all, job done, finish, kaput. But a lot of the time, you know, school children, they get bullied. One guy gets called fatso. Other guy gets called, I don't know, limbo. Other guy gets called Rambo. People get mocked all the time. You know, try being ugly in today's school. See what all sorts of, you know, people say at your children. You know, if your child maybe has, you know, a squint eye, they're going to hear, you know, all sorts when they get to school. They are. Hey, lazy eye. They're going to hear that at school. So what are you going to do? Go and go compare to the principal. Look at this, you know, this my child goes to school and all his friends are mocking him. Get them to stop mocking him. And the principal says, okay, I'll talk to the children. So he'll talk to the children today, but tomorrow there's a new person coming to the school. So then what are they going to do? That's like trying to stop diarrhea by using a Coke. Can you ever do that? No. Because for as long as the disease is there, the symptoms are going to keep coming. One after the other, day after day after day. That's why all human beings who suffer deserve to hear this truth, so that they can free themselves from suffering once and for all, so that they don't feel that they are a victim of their circumstances, so that they don't feel that it's the environment that brings them suffering. This is where true happiness lives. Now, how grateful do you feel towards the Buddha after having heard what you heard today? Just that bit. And I haven't even said everything I wanted to share with you yet. Just think about how grateful you feel towards the Buddha. You know, at least if you are beginning to understand that there's a philosophy out there, if I understand it, at least you're beginning to understand it. If I understand this fully, I realize that I am not going to perceive anger. I'm not going to sense grief. I'm not going to sense fear and jealousy, disappointment. So that's a state of ultimate bliss. How grateful should you feel right now towards the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha? That is why the Noble Triple Gem is our only refuge. Natthi me saranang anyan, Buddho me saranang vara. As I say, long live the Sambuddha Sasana. For as long as the Sambuddha Sasana prevails, we have hope. The day the Sambuddha Sasana perishes, there will be no point in our existence, because it will simply be eternal suffering. That's it. You are so fortunate, you have so much merits to be able to listen to the Buddha's teaching, just as meritorious as I am to hear the Buddha's preaching and his teaching from my teachers. So keep on doing those merits. And every time you do your merits, make a resolve that may by the power of these merits I be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. It's not about becoming a monk necessarily. It's about understanding the truth. As I said, the distance between you and I is the degree to which you have understood the truth. The more you understand the truth, with the caveat of responsibilities and duties set aside, right? With that caveat, I always put that there because it's only reasonable. If there are no duties and responsibilities that keep you bound to your lay life, once you understand this truth, you will want to commit your life. Because this is the ultimate bliss. This is like the oasis in the middle of a desert. It is. This is the oasis in the middle of a desert. If you can tell me one other way to achieve happiness, come and tell me. I challenge you. I dare you. I will disrobe today and come with you. I'll give this robe to the Anagarika Mahatya. I'll take his sarong and shirt. If you can tell me just one other way in which you can actually achieve ultimate happiness, real happiness, unconditional happiness, where your happiness is not taken away or bothered or it cannot be taken away by someone else or something else. If you can teach me how to do that, come and tell me. I don't want your pirikara. Come and give me that. I will come with you right now. I promise you. I speak with such confidence. Why? Not because the Buddha said so. Oh, no. No. Not because he said so, but because I understand it today. I speak with conviction. This is the truth. Take it or leave it. This is the truth. Right. Enough for today? So you have some homework now then, yeah? Please do try and do this over the course of next week. Right, at least a few things, right? A handful of things. And you look at them, try and see the being in it, the becoming of it. Not fixed entities. Look at not the nouns, but the verbs. In what tense? The continuous tense. Do try and do that. Which brings me on to one last thing I want to mention. There's a date for your diary. The 26th of December, which is the Poya coming up. Now I know it's only the day after Christmas, so we might have made other plans. If so, it's perfectly fine. But we have our next ordination ceremony at the monastery, and someone you know is getting ordained. Yes? Yes. Channa. The charioteer. Huh? I'm referring to the Anagarika Mahatya, who drove Swami Nuhanse to the school for the last 6 months, safely, on time, and brought all this equipment with him. So he was tantamount to making sure that this sermon could happen. Right? And most of the time he would be at the back of the room, pacing up and down. Sometimes he would have little sleep from the previous night, because Saturdays are a very busy day at the monastery. So those of you who have come, you know. Saturdays are the busiest day at the monastery, because we have Guru Hamdra sermon in the afternoon and the morning English sermon. So many, many people, sometimes in the hundreds, if not in the thousands, people come on a Saturday. Many hundreds, at least 300 or 400 people. Actually, no, we have 300 people ourselves. But from the outside, at least 400 people come every Saturday. So sometimes they're very busy days. But despite all that, he would always be ready at the car when Swami Nuhanse arrives, opens the door. Swami Nuhanse, please get in. We are ready to go make a dent in the world. And he would set off for Rajagiri, always having you in his thoughts, bringing Swami Nuhanse here. So having earned all those merits of being a key part of bringing the Dhamma to you, you know, his merits are going to pay him rewards. So on the 26th of December, he will be receiving his ordination at the monastery, and he wanted me to pass on the invitation to all of you. He considers you a part of his family now. So he's very happy about the fact that we've been able to get this far. Especially, you know, we have regulars now who come along every week. You know, this is really something, the fact that we've been able to come this far. So anyhow, it's on the 26th of December, which is the next Poya day. Pencil it in your diaries. If at all possible, you can come along. So that being the 26th then, which is a Tuesday. That's a Tuesday, isn't it? Yes, Tuesday is the 26th. Isn't it? Tuesday? 26th is the Tuesday. Yeah. So 26th of December is a Tuesday, which is also the Poya day. We will still have the sermon on which day would that be then? 24th. 24th Sunday we'll still have the sermon. So that will be as usual. Unless I inform you that the sermon won't be held, we will normally have it. So yeah, that's that. And one last thing. Last week I said something which was a slip of the tongue. I said Devadatta killed his father. I didn't mean to say that. That was a slip of the tongue. And guess who corrected me? No, this time not Guru Hamdra. It was a young girl in the audience. So when she came up to make her worship, do her worship, she said, Swami Nuhanse, wasn't there another instance where it happened? I said, which one though? You know, when the Devadatta shook the Buddha's blood, wasn't that also a heinous sin? Oh yes, it was. So that's when I realized I by the slip of tongue, I had said the wrong thing. So here's what Devadatta did. He was an accomplice to killing King Ajasattha's father. So Ajasattha was responsible for his father's death. He killed his father, but Devadatta was his accomplice for that. So he didn't directly commit the heinous sin, but he was part of that. But the sins that he committed, Devadatta was shaking the Buddha's blood and causing a schism in the Mahasangha. So those were the two heinous sins. So apologies for the mistake. And thank you for the audience for having spotted that correction. See, teachers come from everywhere. When the student is ready, the teacher always appears. I like it, the fact that, you know, if anyone in the audience, because as I said, I don't feel I'll ever say something that is wrong in the Dhamma, because I'm sharing with you something I understand. But history is something I have to remember. I don't understand history. I remember history. So I was relating to you a fact from history, and it could be that sometimes I might forget something, and if so, please feel free to correct it for the benefit of everyone else. We took that part out of the recording so that it wasn't going to go online, because this young girl came and spotted it, and she made sure that that part was not going to go on the internet. So. Right, with that, we'll conclude for today then. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we have acquired to all those who are deserving of it and bring today's sermon to a close. Okay, so first and foremost then, let us all remind ourselves how fortunate we are, how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards all the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, let us take this moment to transfer those merits to those who make great efforts to preserve and protect the teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the friends of the monastery, our devotees, who, for the sake of merits, to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide for the construction of the monastery to those who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends and our acquaintances, our employers, our employees and our teachers, who have made great sacrifices on our behalf. It is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and able to practice the path. So therefore may they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer this message to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to those who passed away in our names, our forefathers, our ancestors, those who have predeceased us. May they all rejoice in these merits, reminding ourselves that it is their sacrifices today we are able to enjoy the comforts of, and it is in their labor today we reap the rewards. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who make great sacrifices for the peace and harmony of our nation on its behalf. This includes members of the armed forces as well as the police force. Let us also transfer merits to those who would have lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe, as well as those who would have lost their lives in natural disasters such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, blizzards, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintances to us, those who would have gone every step and every mile to help us live comfortably. May they all rejoice in these merits, and with an abundance of compassion and loving kindness, and a sense of gratitude to all of them. Let us transfer all the merits we have acquired. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may you and I beg your pardon, and finally, may by the power of the merits that we have all acquired and the blessings that we have all acquired, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a rahatan vahanse or an arahat teranin vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And the members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnan nidatva, dvesha ginnan nidatva, moha ginnan nidatva, nibbana parana sukhayan. Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva, desha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivansata ladeva, nivansata ladeva. Nivansata ladeva
Tundruvange suvisi ananta mahaguna belen Silu loka silu sattayoma Nibbana paramasukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu